irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to The Dr. Nina Show. I'm Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin. I'm a psychoanalyst specializing in weight, food, and body image issues, and I'm here to help you break free of the diet trap and lose weight without dieting. That means no more counting calories or carbs, no more thinking about food all the time. It really is possible to lose weight and gain health, all without ever having to think about going on a diet. So today is Valentine's Day. Yay! And I thought it would be a good time to talk about self-love, not just love. Self-love is the key to making peace with food for good. Self-love is the key to all your relationships. When you love yourself, you're only going to accept loving treatment from other people. And when you love yourself, you can feel more lovable. And when people love you, you can actually believe them and take their love in. Love is needed to work through the limiting beliefs that keep us turning to food. We need love to believe that we are worthy of the best food, exercise, care, and relationships that we can have. I guess you could say that we need love to love ourselves. You know, we need love to believe that our bodies are worthy of premium unleaded instead of regular. Okay, so that was kind of a weird analogy, but I am thinking about getting an electric car, so I've got fuel on my mind. So we need love to hold space for the fear that maybe losing weight means being judged by other people, being objectified, inviting bad things to happen, or being unpredictable. Sometimes people are afraid, like, if they lose weight, they're going to do something wacky. Like, if I lose weight, I'm afraid I'm going to, you know, just lose all control and take another job or leave my husband or, you know, whatever. There's this, some people think that if you lose weight, you're going to be impulsive, or that if you lose weight, you're going to be objectified, or if you lose weight, people will only see you for what you look like instead of for the person that you are. There are a lot of reasons that we fear losing weight. So how do we show love to ourselves? We show love by comforting, soothing, and validating ourselves. And when we show self-love, we're compassionately giving ourselves the same love we give other people, the way we love our kids, our friends, our partners, our spouses. So when we have self-love, we trust that even without food, we'll find ways to sweeten our lives. When we love ourselves, we know that if we take a rest day, if we hit pause, that's okay. Like, whatever is going on, whatever you need is okay. That feelings are just reactions to situations, and we allow ourselves to maybe take a break from our lives without using food for that purpose. Lots of times people tell me that they're so busy, and the only time they get a break is when they eat or binge. And you know what? You can have a break from your life. You can rest, you can relax without binging. I give you permission. Do not feel guilty for giving yourself what you need. When we love and accept ourselves, we understand our own limits, and we also invite other people to help us when we need help. We hold enough love to respect and accept our bodies, our personalities, our histories, our families, our relationships, our struggles, our strengths, all of who we are. That is self-love. Self-love ultimately is self-acceptance. So I'd love to hear your thoughts about this subject. How do you show yourself self-love? What do you struggle with? What makes it easier to love yourself? What makes it difficult? Give me a call and weigh in, so to speak. on this topic of self-love. The number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. So I want to share an article on self-love by Dr. Deborah Kashaba. And this is from Psychology Today, and it is titled, A Seven-Step Prescription for Self-Love. Oh, hold that thought. We have a caller, and I know who it is. Hi, Nick. Welcome to the show. Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day to you.
I recognize your number. I have your number, Nick.
You got my number. You know, sometimes recognize love to yourself. To me, maybe this is really off the wall, is like eating something. You know, is boy, I have an echo on this phone.
I don't hear it.
You hear me?
No, I hear okay. You. I don't hear the echo.
Okay, maybe it's better. But eating sometimes certain things is that I'm doing for myself that's love, and that I really enjoy. Not the binging or all the craziness of it, or the you know, sometimes things that I like that I know that if I eat too much of it, it's going to hurt me. And if I, you know, but if I crave it and I just eat a little bit of it, it's not going to do anything to my body or make me feel badly that I ate it. It's okay. Do you understand?
What I'm saying? I think what you're saying is that you're not turning to whatever food this is to relieve an you know, something emotional. You're not trying to change the way you feel. You're not using it for comfort, for self-soothing, for distraction, to numb yourself, for any other purpose, but that you're actually giving yourself what you want.
Exactly.
So, and that's
without hurting myself.
Without hurting yourself, right? Which is good, you know, that because we're actually meant to enjoy food. It's not just like that we have to eat for survival. If we were to eat for survival, we'd all like have pellets like or bars like the astronauts have. I mean, we're supposed to like food, and we lose the ability to enjoy food when we start to use it for comfort, for soothing, or to turn to it or against it or whatever that we're doing. So what else can you do for yourself, Nick? You're talking about having a craving, having a yearning for something and being able to meet it. If you weren't going to do it with food, how else might you give yourself something, let's say, sweet? Not literally sweet, but what sweetness in your life can you give yourself?
Would you consider what I should? I mean, like, I should exercise more.
No, that's not sweetness. That's
no, I hate that.
I've talked to you enough to know that exercise is not your favorite thing. Like, I'm gonna myself the gift of exercise. No, not so much.
I've heard you say you hate exercise, going to the gym.
Oh, I hate going to the gym. Yeah, I hate going to the gym, but I love taking my dog Zane on big power walks, and I love ice skating, and I love Krav Maga. You have to do, when you do what you love, it doesn't feel like exercise. So what else do you love, what else do you enjoy in life that doesn't involve food?
God, I'm going to tell you, I'm embarrassed to say that I don't have many things that I love to do. I wish I could say I have something I love to do. I mean, I love to see, I mean, I don't do a good movie. That's something I love to do.
Movies are great, especially one that makes you feel really good.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, at different times. And I don't think this is one, but I mean, I'm really enjoying watching the Olympics. You know?
That is one. But that's not. Yes, that is one. Something that you enjoy doing, that gives you a lift, that entertains you. It doesn't have to be like lofty. You're not gonna be like, oh, I just love reading Camus and Voltaire. I mean, like, that's not gonna happen. You know, unless you're particularly into, you know, French philosophers and writers. But you got to think about what. So watching the Olympics is so fun. It's so cool. You get in the spirit. You root for your team. You root for the whatever. Like, wow, go Chloe Kim, go. That's exactly what I'm talking about. Something fun.
Yeah, I definitely enjoy that. I definitely enjoy that. I mean, I don't want to be glued to the television to say that's what it is, but I enjoyed an old series, West Wing, and I had it on my Netflix, and ended up watching the whole, you know, 7 series of it. But I enjoyed that. I went out and did things, and when I came back, it beat watching these MSNBC things all day long, and so on and so forth. But I enjoy that, and that was interesting to me, and it was good. It was good. I with Chris, we could talk about it. You know, it was really how it compared to what was going on in our government today. And it was just, we could discuss it. It was fun. I really enjoyed it.
So when you feed your soul in some way, food becomes less important. And what you're saying is, better to binge watch a TV show than to binge on, I don't know, chocolate cake. Not that you binge on chocolate cake, but as an example. But what you're also saying is, not only did you enjoy the experience of watching the show, but it allowed you to connect with your girlfriend in a different way, and that's really meaningful and good. So you see, there's a ripple effect when you do things that you like. It ripples out into other areas of your life.
Yeah. I mean, and we do that a lot. I mean, especially with the Olympics, and it really gets us going, you know, rooting and so on, you know, how the next person is going to do the next one, how this one. I get involved in it, and it's fun. And I don't, and sometimes I'm not rooting for the Americans. You know, you end up rooting for this person. It's just the people, the personalities. It's fun.
Yeah, that 18-year-old Russian skater was something else. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah, I mean, unbelievable, yeah. Unbelievable. And even but they were all these people that are just young and doing it and watching and how they do it. It's just the perfection. And, you know, God, I wonder if I would have been able to do something like that, you know, and watching them do it. And it was really, it's interesting, and it's fun, and whether it's a girls' hockey team or whatever, you got into it. And it kept me away from food. It wasn't food I was praising or anything like that.
Exactly.
We weren't sitting in front of the TV eating brownies, you know, and ice cream.
Well,
watching what was happening.
When you engage your mind, and when you're thinking about other things, and you're in the world, when you're relating to the world, even if it's in a TV, and other people, then you're not going to just have this relationship between you and your body, you and food, because that's a very small world. It's safe. It's a horrible world to live in, but it's safe in some ways. And when you can trust that the world is interesting, the world can be interested in you, you could be interested in the world, and expand your horizons, then food becomes less of a thing.
Yeah.
So it takes an Olympic effort mentally to make this shift. You know, it can feel that way. It can feel yeah. very difficult. But I you've been calling in since July, and I hear change, and that's wonderful.
Yeah, it's a good thing.
It's a great thing. You're
a great thing.
You're accepting, instead of being embarrassed that you don't have a lot of stuff that you love to do, just think, okay, let me be curious, not critical. Let me think about what it is that I might like to do. If I'm not thinking about food, if I'm not thinking about the scale, if I'm not thinking about all of that stuff, what would I be interested in? What would be fun? What did I like to do as a kid? Before, I know that you've said as a kid you felt fat and unlovable. Before that, what are the things you love to do? No, just sometimes we just have to remember that, and that sparks us for something now.
Yeah, makes sense.
So what are you doing for Valentine's Day?
Well, it's a double whammy here because it's Chris's birthday too.
Oh.
So so Chris's birthday and Valentine's Day were celebrating, running around, doing things, and obviously going to dinner, and have a nice day. Have a real nice day.
It sounds like you're going to have a great day. It sounds like Chris is going to have a great day, and happy Valentine's Day to both of you, and just keep being, keep sweetening your life and sharing your thoughts with us. I know that people really get a lot out of seeing the questions that you ask or what you share. People can relate to it, and it's so cool to see you change.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you very much, because you're a major, major, major part of it.
Well,
and I appreciate it.
You are.
And you have a happy.
I will. I'm going to spend it with my husband and my family, and that is like the best gift of all.
And Zane.
Well, he's part of the family. Yes, and Zane.
He's a major.
Yes.
He's a major.
He's the biggest part of the family, literally.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you, Nick. I'll talk to you next week.
Okay.
Bye. Aw. For those of you who don't know Zane, people who follow me on Instagram know that Zane is my 160-pound Great Dane, deaf, nearly blind, giant bundle of love who thinks he is a lap dog and is the sweetest creature on earth. I'm just saying. Yeah, that's all you need for Valentine's Day is a little Zane. Okay. So back to the 7-step prescription for self-love. So Dr. Kashaba says self-love is an action, not a state of feeling good. She says self-love is a popular term today that gets tossed around in normal conversation. People say things like, you have to love yourself more. Why don't you love yourself? If you only loved yourself, this wouldn't have happened to you. You can't love another person until you love yourself first. These are just a few of the self-love directives that we give or get to suggest a way to more fulfillment. So self-love is important to living well. It influences who you pick for a mate. That's what I was saying. Oh, hold on. Hi, Nick. Welcome back. Oh, I think he might have called by mistake. Okay. I think he might have called by mistake. All right. That's what I was saying earlier. When you love yourself, you're only going to expect good, loving treatment from others. When you don't love yourself, it is easier to accept less than stellar treatment from others. So self-love influences who you pick for a mate, the image you project at work, and how you cope with the problems in your life. It is so important to your welfare that I want you to know how to bring more of it into your life. Again, this is from a 7-step prescription for self-love by Dr. Kashaba. So what is self-love? Is it something you can buy in a beauty makeover or a new set of clothing? Can you get more of it by reading something inspirational? Or can a new relationship make you love yourself more? The answer to all of these questions is no, no, no. Oh, I love my sound effects. So although all of those things feel good and are gratifying, you can't grow in self-love through those types of activities. Self-love is not simply a state of feeling good. It is a state of appreciation for oneself that grows from actions that support our physical, psychological, and spiritual growth. Self-love is dynamic. It grows by actions that mature us. When we act in ways that expand self-love in us, we begin to accept much better our weaknesses as well as our strengths. We have less need to complain away our shortcomings. We have compassion for ourselves as human beings struggling to find personal meaning, and we're more centered in our life purpose and values and expect fulfillment through our own efforts. So here is Dr. Kashaba's 7-step prescription for self-love. Number one, become mindful. People who have more self-love tend to know what they think, feel, and want. They are mindful of who they are, and they act on this knowledge rather than on what others want for them. And I would add what others think they should do, feel, and so forth, and want. Number two, act on what you need rather than what you want. You love yourself when you can't turn away from something that feels good and exciting to what you need to stay strong, centered, and moving forward in your life. By staying focused on what you need, you turn away from automatic behavior patterns that get you in trouble, keep you stuck in the past, and lessen self-love. I don't know. I would say that so many people think that needs are needy, and they turn away from what they need, and they think, oh, you know, I shouldn't need that, or I shouldn't want that. And I guess what she's saying is, you know, think about what enlivens your life, what makes you feel just the most, the best you that you can be, that just fills your life with purpose and sweetness and all of that. And we need that. We need to feel some sense of purpose. We need to feel gratification. We need to feel that we're important. We need to feel loved, and we need to feel good. Those are needs that we can trust and focus on. And I think what she's saying is that is important. But I would say that what you want is also important too. But moving on. Okay. Third on her 7-step prescription for self-love is practice good self-care. You will love yourself more when you take better care of your basic needs. People high in self-love nourish themselves daily through healthy activities like good nutrition, exercise, proper sleep, intimacy, and healthy social interactions. And I'm glad that she added healthy social interactions there, because often when we talk about the self, you know, self-care, people tend to think only of the self that's in the mirror. I've talked before about the woman who told me that she was the queen of self-care, you know, and I said, okay, well, your worship, please share how you're the queen of self-care, because what she said was she's the queen of self-care, and she didn't feel any happier. So she was telling me that she didn't think self-care was the key to anything, any change in her relationship to herself or food. And it turned out that her definition of self-care was getting manicures and pedicures and getting her hair blown out and getting massages and, you know, getting eyelash extensions and all of this. This to her was self-care. And what I said was, no, that is not self-care. That's grooming. Yourself is more than your body self, and you need to pay attention to more than just what your body needs. Yes, you need sleep. Yes, you need to eat healthy. Yes, you need to exercise, some people need all those things that the queen of self-care was doing, but that's not self-care. So self-care is really honoring what is going on with you in your head, your heart. What do you want, feel, think, need? That's self-care. Number four, set boundaries. You'll love yourself more when you set limits or say no to work, love, or activities that deplete or harm you physically, emotionally, and spiritually, or poorly express who you are. So I guess when she says say no to love, I'm not sure what she means, but I'm going to take it as, you know, set limits and do what's right for you, like the oxygen metaphor that is so common but so perfect, because when you go in a plane and the flight attendant says, parents, if the oxygen masks drop, put them on yourself first. Do not put them on your children first. Because obviously, if you give your oxygen to somebody else, what's going to happen? You're going to suffocate. No bueno. Yeah. So when you give yourself oxygen and take care of yourself, meet your own needs, then you're much in a much better position to be able to do that for other people. Number five is protect yourself. Bring the right people into your life. She says she loves the term frenemies that she learned from her younger clients. It describes so well the type of friends who take pleasure in your pain and loss rather than in your happiness and success. My suggestion to you here, this is, she's talking, she says, get rid of them. There isn't enough time in your life to waste on people who want to take away the shine on your face that says, I genuinely love myself and life. You will love and respect yourself more. Sometimes people stay connected to other people simply because they have history together. You know, relationships where but I've known them since college. You know, it's been 20 years. We have history. I can't lose that friendship. But what is this friendship doing for you? Nothing. People are there for other people, there to meet their needs. They're, you know, at the drop of a hat if they need something. And yet if these so-called friends are unavailable when you need something. If you have someone that where the balance of your friendship is out of whack, really evaluate whether that is a toxic person in your life and either minimize your the time that you spend around them, or as the Dr. Kashaba says, get rid of them. And really think about, like, again, when you feel good about yourself, you're going to want people who also make you feel good about yourself, and vice versa. When you feel good about yourself and other people want to take that away from you because of jealousy or envy or whatever, or they're just too self-involved, then what is that? How is that relationship, quote unquote, feeding you? Really think about that. Number six is forgive yourself. We humans can be so hard on ourselves. The downside of taking responsibility for our action is punishing ourselves too much for our mistakes. Mistakes are the way that we learn and grow. You have to accept your humanness, the fact that you are not perfect, before you can truly love yourself. So practice being less hard on yourself when you make a mistake. Remember, there are no failures if you have learned and grown from your mistakes. There are only lessons learned. And also think about, what is a mistake? You know, something that I hear a lot from people who say, well, I'm trying to eat clean, and I ate a piece of bread, and that was a mistake. So I figured, well, I've already had one piece of bread, I might as well have more. And then I've already had this bread, so I might as well have some cookies and ice cream or whatever. This idea that, like, this all or nothing. If I made a mistake, then the day is ruined. No. First of all, let's evaluate that. It is not a mistake to eat something that you think you shouldn't eat. I don't know what this clean eating thing really is. Like, what's the opposite of clean eating? Dirty eating. It's just making healthy choices the most that you can do. And when you make healthy choices and you don't look on eating something with a carb as a mistake, then you don't feel bad about yourself when you do eat a carb, as you will inevitably do. So evaluate what you think mistakes actually are. Are you too black and white, all or nothing, dichotomously thinking it's either this or it's that? It's either clean eating or it's dirty eating. Find the rainbow between the black and white thinking, and you're going to feel so much better. The last is live intentionally. You will accept and love yourself more, whatever is happening in your life, when you live with purpose and design. Your purpose doesn't have to be crystal clear to you. If your intention is to live a meaningful and healthy life, you'll make decisions that support this intention, and you'll feel good about yourself when you succeed. You will love yourself more if you see yourself accomplishing what you set out to do. You need to establish your intentions to do this. Yeah, and that's so important. So often our intentions are focused on things like, my intention is to lose weight. And that becomes your focus. And it reminds me of this book called The Body Project, in which the author followed looked at diaries of young girls, adolescent girls to teenagers, between the 1800s and I think the 1990s, maybe early 2000s, I forget when the book was published. But in the 1800s and up until about World War I, girls were writing about how they wanted to be better people, more moral people. They wanted to be thought of as good, decent human beings. And this was their purpose. And this was what they wanted. And sometime after World War II, I think it was, the what girls were writing about in their diaries changed dramatically. They stopped writing about wanting to be perceived as good people and started focusing on wanting to be perceived as skinny people. So there was this really radical shift over time from valuing who you are as a person to valuing what you look like and what your appearance is, and with the idea that in the various decades, of course, there was a different ideal. You know, my Twiggy in the 60s, and I don't know who it would be in the Cindy Crawford, you know, in the 80s, so which was a different body. But so they're always comparing themselves to whatever the body type was that was popular, and feeling bad about themselves, and they stopped thinking about the kind of people that they were and started thinking only about their bodies. And when I say that, I include myself, because when I look back at my old journals from when I was an adolescent, even younger, most of my life, every page of every journal was just numbers. What I had eaten, what I was going to eat, what I wasn't going to eat, how many calories I burned, how many fat grams I'd had, blah, 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 or measurements. Oh, my waist is this. Oh, it needs to be this. And it's so sad when I think about those wasted years of just focusing on what the scale says as the way that I felt good about myself. You have to find a way to feel good about yourself by living purposefully and finding something that is meaningful, whatever that is to you. And it doesn't have to be grand or big. There's someone in my Facebook group for my Sweeten Your Life Challenge that my Kick the Diet Habit program members finished today. Yay! That tells me. We finished today, but I'm going to do another one in the summer, so stay tuned. I'll tell you more about that if you missed it and you want to do it. Again, I'll be telling you more about that. But anyway, she crochets little hats for babies, newborns, and gives them to the hospital. And this just really feeds her soul, right? And when you find a sense of purpose and you do something that is meaningful to you, then, you know, you're just not going to be so worried about the number on the scale. So back to the article. Dr. Kashaba says, if you choose just one or two of these self-love actions to work on, you will begin to accept and love yourself more. Just imagine how much you'll appreciate you when you exercise these seven steps to self-love. It is true that you can only love a person as much as you love yourself. If you exercise all of the actions of self-love that I describe here, you will allow and encourage others to express themselves the same way. The more self-love you have for yourself, the better prepared you are for healthy relating. Even more, you will start to attract people and circumstances to you that support your well-being. You know, those people are there. Those people are there. It's just a matter of seeing them. I hear a lot about this law of attraction, or I attract only bad guys. I attract, you know, narcissistic guys who only care about themselves. And usually it's not that this person has attracted these men like a magnet, like she's got this magnetic force field, like, come to me, bad boys. No, it's that her tolerance for bad boys is so high. Or that maybe she's trying to work out some original wound. Maybe she had an unresolved relationship with a parent or a brother or a sister. It doesn't even have to be the same gender. When we have relationships that are unresolved and people treat us a certain way, sometimes we choose for partners people who are very similar, hoping that if we can change that relationship, we heal the original wound. So, for example, if you have a critical father, and you can never please the father, nothing you ever do is right, and you just, it's an unresolved, painful relationship in your life, and then you go on a date with some guy, some dude who's critical, judges you, makes little comments about you, nothing you do is right. Now, if you have self-love, you'll never go out with that guy again, because you'll be like, no, thank you. I love myself too much to go out with the likes of you. However, if you don't have self-love and you're trying to repeat the something and get something from this relationship that you never got before, if you're trying to heal your relationship with your judgmental father, unconsciously, by the way, it's not like you're going, yes, I will do this. It's unconscious. If the part of you says, I'm gonna go after this judgmental guy and I'm gonna get him to love me, because that's going to make me feel loved. My father, my judgmental father, didn't make me feel loved and lovable, but if I can get this judgmental guy to love me, that's going to heal the original relationship. And of course, guess what happens? It doesn't work, because judgmental people are judgmental people. They don't turn around and suddenly become loving and generous and supportive and fabulous. No, they stay the same. So all that happens is you repeat the same pattern that you had with a new person. When you heal the original relationship by grieving what happened and what didn't happen, then you have self-love and you want to take care of yourself and you want to be around people who nurture you and love you and make you feel good about yourself. You're going to go out with judgment boy and you're going to be like, no, thank you. You're going to go out with a nice guy. And maybe before, lots of people who go out with judgmental bad boys think when the thought of a nice guy is like, ugh, ew, too nice, ugh. But when they heal their original relationships, the reason that they're turning to these bad boys, then suddenly these nice guys seem really nice and sexy and good, and then they have happy, healthy relationships. So that's why your relationship to yourself is critical for you in terms of your relationship to others. Okay, so now I have another article to share with you, and this is from Mind Body Green. It is by Nikita Chopra, a motivational lifestyle guru and writer who wants to, as she puts it, inspire radical self-love. And she wrote an article called 10 Wonderful Ways to Practice self-love. So, here's what she says. And this is Nikita Chopra. What a great name. Like a little Russian and a little Indian. Awesome. Okay, so she says, I know the whole self-love thing is being talked about all over the place right now, but most people still have no clue what that even means. It really means something different for each person because we all have many different ways to show that we love ourselves. The real question is, why should we even care? I've found that when I feel my lowest, when my body has been the most sick, and when I am bombarded with the most self-deprecating thoughts, the only thing to pull me up and out is drenching myself in self-love. If you still feel confused or lost on where to start with your own self-love conversation, don't worry. She put together a list to help get you started. Here's her list. Number one, create a self-love ritual. Turn off the TV and unplug from social media for 15 minutes to get centered while self-pampering. Her favorite way to do this is to moisturize with intention. As she says, as I massage my feet, I thank them for getting me to where I need to go. As I moisturize my hands, I love them for all the transactions and introductions they've helped me with throughout my life. I stop taking my body and my life for granted and relish how blessed I am while showering myself with gratitude. Oh, that's beautiful. Number two, build a precious community. As much as we would like to think we can't do everything ourselves. Amen to that, Nikita. You need the support and love from people around you to stay motivated and on track. Positive energy is contagious, so whether you're building a network or planning to go to a fun event, it's always important to have a community you value around you regularly. Oh, and this brings me back to the frenemies, you know, friends. This community has to be made up of friends, not frenemies. Number three, make a what's working for me list. You always hear that to love someone else, you must first learn to love yourself. But in order to really love yourself, sometimes you have to recognize all the love you have around you. One of the practices I do when I'm feeling down is to go within and acknowledge what's really working, and then make a what's working for me list. Once you see it on paper and accept all the positivity in your life, it will make it that much easier to love yourself. So, if you want to share what's working for you, we have about 9 more minutes left in the show. I'd love to hear from you, 818-602-4929. Otherwise, I'm going to keep going on this list. Number four, know that your body is a loving vessel. Treating your body like a loving vessel will not only boost your self-love, but also your energy. Be intentional about what you put in your body, not only because you want to look good, but because you want to feel good. Feeding your body nutrient-rich foods will have you oozing love out of every pore. I don't know. I'm sorry. Oozing and love don't quite go together in my mind, but she makes a good point. When you love yourself more, yes, you will want to give yourself healthy foods. You will be less likely to use food as a way to distract from yourself. When you can comfort yourself and soothe yourself and support yourself and love yourself and accept yourself, then you will not be using food for that purpose. We have a caller. Hi, caller. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi, Dr. Nina. This is Larry. How are you?
Hello, Larry from Burbank. How are you? Happy Valentine's Day.
Yeah, you too. Thank you. Yeah, Larry from Burbank. That's right. Forgot the city. You know, I can tell you what has worked for me. I actually just started reading a wonderful book that was a bestseller a couple of years ago called The Power of Habit. And I don't know if you wanted to discuss how a behavior can eventually become a habit. Because to me, if I do something that works, but it doesn't become sort of automatic, it can fall by the wayside. So I've heard that it takes 21 days to do something, or I don't know if you're a believer in just, as they say at Nike, just do it, get started, or if there's some relevance to that whole habit thing from your standpoint?
I think it depends on what it is that you're trying to, what habit you're trying to change or what habit you're trying to instill. But when it comes to changing your habitual responses to yourself when you feel a certain way, you have to understand where those come from. And that's otherwise, then it's called willpower. I will not eat ice cream when I'm upset. I will not eat ice cream when I'm upset. And then, you'll just switch to something else. Because if you don't understand that you need to learn to comfort yourself when you're upset or why you can't, then you'll never really change. So it's sort of the if there's a root to the weed, you can't just forcibly change a habit. You need to figure out why you're doing it first to make a change. When it comes
understood.
To this. Yeah, when it comes to this. For other things, you know, I'm sure that, yes, you can create the habit of, you know, every day I'm going to walk a mile when I come home from work. And in 30 days, I've heard 30 days, but 21 days sounds even better. Then maybe you can instill that habit. But so it depends on what you're trying to change.
Okay. I guess what you're saying partly is that if it's a negation of something negative with my self-talk, if that new behavior is rooted in negating the negative, then that's not good. But it has to be affirming a positive. I know in sports psychology, if I'm a golfer, for example, and I say, I will not slice this drive, I will not, guess what you're going to do? The unconscious just follows. It doesn't know not. But, you know, professional athletes visualize the positive, and maybe the positive behavior or even positive mindset has to be the positive of something good.
Yes, and I think, for example, one thing that you can do is, if you say, oh, I really feel like I need that cake, you ask yourself, what's eating at me? So the new habit is, I'm going to ask myself, what's eating at me? Why do I want that cake? What's going on with me? What am I thinking? What am I feeling? What am I needing? What's happening here? What am I trying to get away from? Why? So if you get in the habit of asking yourself why, then you're more likely to find answers. And then the next habit is, okay, I'm going to respond to myself in a different way. But in order to achieve that, you do have to have an understanding of yourself on a deeper level of, well, what is going on here?
Okay. That makes sense. In my case, I've discovered that when I ask that why question and I take the time to stop before I grab that cake automatically, the why isn't in the form of any words, because apparently where it comes from is before I form language.
Pre-verbal.
Or maybe that's just a self-defeating mindset. I don't know.
But you do have language now. So
yeah.
And you can say, well, I know intellectually that cake is the bulky filling category, and that's associated with filling a void. So therefore, there must be some part of me that is feeling lonely or empty. Let me look at that.
Okay. Yeah, it's. I guess that's making a habit, maybe a cognitive habit of looking at it from that standpoint, regardless of whether I was 3 or 10 or a zygote. I could fake now,
because you do have language now, and so when you can bring yourself up from that regressed place of feel upset, want cake, no words, you know, you can. It's a regression to something primal, even when you can use your mind to recognize, okay, this is why I want this. This is how I learn this. This is why I don't. This is why I have deficits in language, comforting language to myself. But I now know I'm not that little pre-verbal person. I'm a person with language, and I'm going to respond to myself the way that I wasn't responded to.
you know, it, when you say that, it reminds me of a book that I ordered just yesterday. And I'm reluctant to mention the title because it may not be in line with your line of thinking, and I don't want your listeners to say, "Oh, I got to try this." You know,
that's okay.
With that, okay, okay. It's the U.S. Military Book of Willpower.
No, oh, I made that God. Up.
It's actually called the title. And if this doesn't sound like it's a good idea, say so, and we'll know that. But I can always return it. It's called Brain Over Binge.
Oh,
and when we were talking about using the cortex,
No.
Okay.
Because we don't just have brains, we have minds. And this sort of brain, and I talk about this a little bit in my book, Food for Thought, and I'm talking about it a lot in my upcoming book, and I'm actually writing about it in a chapter that I'm doing right now on the psychoanalytic view of addictions. There is this zeitgeist in this country that says everything's brain-based, but to separate our brains from our minds is a dangerous thing. Our minds and our brains are connected. My thoughts create, anyway, I'm actually running out of time, but if you call back, I will pick this up next week, because it's so important to recognize that the way that we think does affect our brains. It's not the other way around. We are not just brain-based creatures. You could see I'm getting all, ooh, I want to talk about this. So, yes, we turn that book, Larry, from Burbank, because it's not going to help you. Our minds are much more powerful.
Okay. What I'm going to do is return it unopened, and Amazon's return policy of printing out the barcode, it's simple, and, you know, that's a done deal. So thanks for the advice. That's a good reason why.
And I will talk more about that next week. If you call in first thing, we can talk more. I can talk about it. I can talk about it with you. It's something that a lot of people ask about and think about, and I have some answers to that are a little bit more thorough than what I just said. So I'd be happy to talk to you next week. And thank you for being my last Valentine's Day caller. So have a...
There you go. Look, the chocolates are in the mail, but don't eat it. It's bad for you. Okay. Anyway.
Happy Valentine's Day, and I will hopefully speak with you next week.
Will do. Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye. And that is our show on this Valentine's Day 2018. Have a sweet day, all of you, and I am here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific here on LA Talk Radio. If you want to listen live, if you want to listen online, you can listen on iTunes or in the archives at latalkradio.com. Thanks for joining me, and I will see you next week. Bye for now.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.